From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made this past weekend when Indianapolis Colts star quarterback Andrew Luck announced his retirement. It was, by almost any measure, the most shocking sports retirement since at least Michael Jordan's first attempt to stop playing basketball. Luck is still relatively young, just turning 30, and he led a playoff season for the Colts in 2018. Luck cited his own health as a major factor in his decision. He's overcome shoulder injuries, among others, and he's taken more big hits than most players in the league. He's understandably concerned about his brain and his long-term mental health. And that has observers wondering if the Andrew Luck story represents any kind of turning point for American football. Just this week, the Associated Press reports that the Rensselaer City School District is canceling its varsity football season after failing to recruit enough players to form a team. According to the National Federation of State High School Associations, peak participation for American football was a decade ago at 1.1 million kids. It's been gradually declining since then. Our guests will debate the impact of the Andrew Luck retirement and the future of football. And in studio, we welcome Mike Catalana, sports director for 13WHAM News. Thanks for being here.
Good to be here, Evan.
Also with us is Daniel Kelly, a former college football player. Nice having you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And all on the line with us is Dr. Mike Maloney, a professor of orthopedics, chief of the sports medicine division, and director of the Center for Human Athleticism and Musculoskeletal Performance and Prevention at UR Medicine. Did I get it all, doctor?
Oh, you nailed it, Evan, as always.
Well, it's good to have you. I'm going to start with Mike Catalana because, you know, certainly we could debate most shocking sports retirements. Was there any part of you that said, I'm shocked but not surprised, or I could see it with this guy, or did you get the news and go, wow, 30 years old, he's in his prime?
Yeah, I got the news and thought, well, because of the timing, for two reasons.
Yeah,
The timing in the big picture, when you are talking about the fact that he did come back from a really rough time with injuries and had a phenomenal season last year, and the timing because it's basically a week and a half or 2 weeks before the season starts. This wasn't like it would have been shocking if he had done it in the beginning of the summer. But I think even for the team, the players were shocked, and that the people closest to him, at least from a football sense, were really surprised. So, yeah, I was very surprised that he decided to do it.
Okay. And what's the first thought on possible impact? Are we all blowing this up saying, oh, this could be a changing moment? Or do you think right now there's a lot of people reexamining things?
I don't see it as much in the full scale of football changing moment when it's a guy like Andrew Luck. When I see a second-year linebacker, you know, who decides I'm done with football, or a guy who's in line to get a first big paycheck who says I'm done with football, that impacts, to me, that would be more so than, look, Andrew Luck could still continue playing and could make a lot more money and he could keep going that way and he's the star of the franchise and all those things. So he has that part of it taken care of for the rest of his life. It's when a guy who doesn't have all that, but it could be right there in front of him, decides to quit. Yes, this is impactful for the NFL. I don't know how much it transfers down to everybody else in football all the way down to the high school level.
You need to see more evidence of that.
Yeah, I think you'd need to see more players in a different position in their life. You'd need to see players who are top-of-the-line high school players who decide, I don't want to go on and play in college, or college players who are going to be first- or second-round draft picks who say, you know what, I don't feel like playing. Then I think it might be more impactful. There's where it's impactful, too. It may be more impactful in Rochester, New York, than it is in Mobile, Alabama.
Yeah, and look, I don't know, Mike. I mean, people say he's banked $100 million, but after taxes, it's only like 50. It's only like $50
million. And the Colts are not going after any of that money.
That's actually very interesting. So there does seem to at least be a pretty amicable parting, given the nature of the timing. You're right, because this does leave the team in a rough spot for a franchise that thought they were going to go back to the playoffs at least this year. Dr. Maloney, what hit your mind when you heard about the Andrew Luck retirement?
Well, I'm not surprised, to be honest. I think this could be a tipping point in how we understand the impact of injury and repetitive injury. And I think, you know, Andrew Luck's a smart guy. He went to Stanford, and his dad's obviously been very successful and involved in his career and involved in the NCAA. I think it's really critical to understand that there is a definite link between what happens physically and the mental side of things. It's very well known and documented that physical injury can trigger or unmask, you know, mental health issues. And I think Andrew Luck was feeling it. And I don't know if you saw the video today of Gronk, but Gronkowski had a video where he came out and he started crying. He started tearing up about how what football had done to him and as much as he loved it. And to see that kind of real genuine reaction that these guys are showing, I think is pretty powerful. And I think it, you know, we've been saying and talking about head injuries for a long time, and it's been getting more and more press and attention, but it's not where we need to be from an understanding standpoint. And I think this just highlights that we have a lot of work to do to understand what these athletes are going through, not just from a physical experience, but also the mental, emotional, and psychological impact.
That's a good point on Gronk. Is he around the same age as Andrew Luck, Mike Catalana?
He is. Yeah, they're both 29.
29, 30 years old. Yeah. So, and Gronk, it feels like, has been in the league forever. And that guy has also had a ton of injuries. So, yeah, that's a good point that Dr. Maloney brings up. We'll have some Andrew Luck sound in just a moment. But before then, Daniel, what hit your mind when you heard the Andrew Luck story?
Well, yeah, I'm from Indianapolis originally, moved here about 6 years ago. And I was a season ticket holder at the Colts. I was there when he was drafted. I was actually in Michigan when I got the text, and I was at a game, a baseball game, a minor league baseball game, and I might have booed as well, but it was a lot of a lot of emotions. I think that as a Hoosier and an old season ticket holder, I think the frustration comes not so much from Andrew Luck retiring as it feels like we've had this situation with the management and the organization to hide injuries with our star players. The same with Peyton Manning, by the way, beforehand. Do I blame Andrew Luck for retiring? Absolutely not. I know we've spoke a little bit here about head injuries and things of that nature, but, I mean, the other injuries are early onset arthritis. I mean, the aching and pain that I even have, and I didn't play professional, but I did play for 14 years, the cold weather here in Rochester doesn't feel good on my joints as it is. So that, I think, was at first, you know, you go through the levels of denial, right? I was upset, angry, then I blamed.
As a fan.
Yeah, as a fan, right. And then today I sit here and I completely understand it. I think that he made the right decision for himself that no one else can judge.
Let's listen to a little bit of what Andrew Luck had to say about his own decision and how difficult this was. Let's listen.
It certainly isn't how I envisioned this or planned this, but I am going to retire. This is not an easy decision. Honestly, it's the hardest decision of my life. But it is the right decision for me. For the last 4 years or so, I've been in this cycle of injury, pain, rehab, injury, pain, rehab. And it's been unceasing and unrelenting, both in season, both in and off season. And I felt stuck in it, and the only way I see out is to no longer play football. It's taken my joy of this game away. I've been stuck in this process. I haven't been able to live the life I want to live, taking the joy out of this game. And after 2016, where I played in pain and was unable to regularly practice, I made a vow to myself that I would not go down that path again. I find myself in a similar situation, and the only way forward for me is to remove myself from football in this cycle that I've been in, come to the proverbial fork in the road, and I made a vow to myself that if I ever did again, I would choose me in a sense.
So you hear a lot of what he's talking about in regards to his own injury history. And I think Daniel Kelly brings up an important point. We're going to talk a lot about CTE this hour. We're going to talk about the impact on head injuries, brain, et cetera. And I know parents are worried about that. But that's a guy, Mike Catalana, who went through a lot. And I think every time we as fans want to say, well, this guy should tough it out, or Kevin Durant should get back in there and play. And, you know, there's so much we don't know about the pain they've been through.
That is a great point. And I've asked that of a few Bills players. Last year, we were at camp, and it was one of the Bills running backs who had come back from injury. And I said, you know, we see you get injured. Unfortunately, sometimes we see a guy carted off the field. And then to some extent, and especially the way the NFL is, they're sort of forgotten and they're sort of brushed aside. And I said, what happens to you is the coach or someone will say to us, you know, he's going to be lost for the season, you know, whatever. Then he'll have surgery, and Dr. Maloney knows that. They will announce that it was successful surgery because the surgery is done. And then it's like, okay, he'll be back in 4 months.
They disappear and magic.
Right. So I said to him, what happens? And he's like, the day I got hurt, I couldn't – I needed help from my wife to get in the car, out of the car, same from surgery. I got home. I was in so much pain. And he went – and he's describing it. And then the feeling that he had in each step along the way, and there were moments where he didn't know, even though, you know, we're being told he'll be ready for training camp, he'll be ready for this. He's going through an awful time to get himself ready. And it's not just to get ready so I can walk into work and go sit on the news set at 13. This is to go play professional football. So his ready and a normal person's ready are two different things. And we just sort of think like, well, they go through some rehab and then they're back on the field. It's easy to feel that way about these guys. And there's a lot of pain to get back to where they think they need to be or where they were before. And we tend, not just reporters, fans, everybody, to think it just sort of magically happens. You know, and it just doesn't work that way.
Before I jump back to Dr. Maloney, I just got to key in on the booing that Daniel mentioned, you know, because the Andrew Luck story broke. I think Schefter broke it. And so everyone during a preseason game, so the fans who are in the stadium are realizing that they're about to hear the official announcement that Andrew Luck is done. And they did boo. I mean, I remember a decade ago writing a piece for a Cleveland Indians season preview book. And they asked me to write a piece on Travis Hafner, who was, you know, an Indians hero at the time and then went on to the Yankees and his career ended. But he was never the same after this mystery shoulder injury. And Travis Hafner is not much of a talker, but he married an old high school classmate of mine, and I had a chance to talk to him for this piece. And he said, look, there were days where I could not lift my arm above my head without feeling amazing pain in my shoulder. And everybody's going, well, is this guy going to tough it out? What's wrong with this guy? You know, his swing looks off. And he's like, nobody knows the day-to-day pain, the rehab, and the cycle that you just heard Luck talk about. So I just want to ask you, Daniel, do you at least feel like the human element to boo with these guys when you get that announcement, Andrew Luck, is one thing? But do you think most people in that stadium feel like you do now, which is, hey, I've had some time to reflect. That was in the moment, because the media has been sort of dogging the fans who were there, booing them.
Well, I have to speak somewhat as a homer, because as a Hoosier, I hope they all feel that way, not just most.
They're nice Midwest people.
Yes.
Everyone in the Midwest is nice.
Absolutely, right. Never a mean person. But no, I think that I would hope that every one of them were – oh, I hope most of them weren't booing Andrew Luck. They were booing the situation.
I think that's probably fair.
I hope so. We were speaking a little bit earlier, and I said, you know, I wish Adam Schefter would have held off on the story, but obviously that's not his job, as I was – but just waited to the – you know, 10 minutes after the fourth quarter, not so much for the fans, but to let Andrew Luck at least be able to approach it on his own. But that's not his job. That's in a perfect world. But I think that's where a lot of the booing, I hope, came from was, you know.
Yeah, you got a problem, Mike Catalano, with the booing?
Yes, but I will say it was just such odd circumstances.
Very strange.
I am fully in support of Adam Schefter for tweeting that the minute he knew it and had it confirmed. The other part I said, and I said to Dan beforehand, that somebody in the Colts or somebody in Luck's family is the one who leaked that to Adam Schefter. That's how he knew about it. So somebody's sort of given him up there. But I think people should regret the booing. There weren't that many people in the stands. It wasn't every Colts fan who was there. It's unfortunate, but they get this news and there he is standing on the field, Andrew Luck, and you're telling me he's quitting? So I would hope in hindsight people would feel a little badly about doing it.
Dr. Maloney, can you add to this idea that as sports fans we probably don't appreciate enough, in particular in a violent sport like football, what these guys go through to try to get ready, to get right, and then to deal with the rehab?
Oh, no question. I mean, I think whether it's professional football or high school athletes, I think people struggle to understand what that individual is going through, not just from a physical standpoint, but the emotional, the psychological impact that injury has. And we see it all the time in these young athletes, whether it's an ACL in a soccer player or a shoulder instability event. I mean, you have this injury that then takes you out of something you've committed your your life to that point too. And now you're disconnected from your peer group, your social group, your identity is not the same. You know, they talk about this identity shift experience. And now you've got to cope with all the emotions that are, you know, coming up because of the injury and what's ahead of you. And I think if you haven't been through it, and that's sometimes where we struggle, where we have to kind of communicate with coaches or parents, where if they haven't had that experience, they may not know what their child or their athlete is going through. And I think it's really important as a healthcare provider that we are paying good attention and that we allow the athlete to the opportunity to express themselves. And it's okay to feel like you're struggling with the injury and the recovery, not just from the physical side, but the emotional side, and provide them the resources to wholly get better.
Well, in a spirit of being kind and lobbing you a softball, Dr. Maloney, can you respond to what I thought was of a sea of bad tweets? Maybe the worst was Doug Gottlieb tweeting, "Retiring because rehabbing is too hard is the most millennial thing ever." Dr. Maloney, you want to take that one?
I mean, that to me is someone who's grabbing for attention. It's an incredibly ignorant comment. And I think, you know, Troy Aikman and the many other people who've kind of reacted to that in some ways did what Doug Gottlieb wanted, gave him more attention, but also have just, you know, reiterated, like, it's such an ignorant thing to kind of put that spin on it. That's not what this is about. You heard the list of injuries that Andrew Luck had, you know, abdominal injuries, kidney lacerations, concussions, multiple shoulder surgeries. Those are real injuries. And I don't think anyone who's been through that would have that type of response. It's just not fair.
So you're saying he's soft?
No way.
I mean, it's just
no way.
And Mike, you kind of laugh, but I mean, I don't know why a guy like Doug Gottlieb even needs that. Doug's got a nice contract.
Yeah.
Why does he need the attention?
Yeah, and you know, again, from the other perspective, you go down that road, and I mean, there's a guy who's had his own issues, you know, when he was a basketball player, he kicked out of Notre Dame and those type of things. And, of course, that comes up as saying, especially going down the whole idea of all millennials.
Yeah, exactly.
In that case, because there's a lot of people that certainly would struggle with this. I don't care if you're 14 or 64, you're going to struggle with things with that rehab.
Well, I want to ask all of you before we get to some listener feedback, just about your thoughts. And again, listeners, we're jumping to CTE a little bit more in our second half hour. The show is not all about brain and football injuries. It's more just about what this moment might mean for a sport. And if we can maybe, if we're at risk of sort of overstating that, or if there is sort of a change happening. So we'll get to that in the second half hour. And if you want to call the program, listeners, 844-295-TALK. It's 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program connections@WXXI.org. And listeners, I would ask you what I'm about to ask our guests, which is, you know, there are soccer players who get concussions from headers. There are all kinds of injuries that happen in sports. Dr. Maloney, is there anything particularly troubling about American football that leads you as a doctor to say, think twice before you've got your kids signed up to play?
Oh, no question. I mean, you know, you can look at all the studies that are out there about the impact of tackling and football having a very high proportion of head and neck injuries. Maybe only gymnastics has more head and neck injuries as a youth sport than football does. And, you know, if 50% of the injuries are associated with tackling, and you've got young athletes who, you know, their brain is developing and they're taking these repeated hits, I mean, shouldn't we be doing something to protect them? And shouldn't we be doing something, A, to understand what these impacts are doing? And I think, you know, I know we're going to talk about CTE, but I think there's still so much work that needs to be done to kind of make that link. It's easy to say, yeah, repetitive hits to the head can lead to CTE. And really, that's not yet been proven. And we need to have more work that, you know, what are we doing to our young athletes? And, hey, I'm a father. I've had two boys play football. I'm guilty of the same transgressions. You know, you want them to play in these sports because there's incredible value at learning, you know, skills and life lessons that will translate, you know, outside of your sport. But you got to weigh the risks, and you have to understand what the risks are. And there's no question that tackling is, you know, and repetitive impacts to the head are not good long term for cognitive function.
Okay, Mike Catalana, what do you think?
I think it's certainly been impactful. I don't, you know, again, there's the two ways of looking at it. I think for parents looking at kids at the moment, it's going to be incredibly impactful because they're not looking at every player. What I was going to say about the NFL, yes, Andrew Luck drops out, but we still have Phillip Rivers and Tom Brady, you know, and Drew Brees.
Baker Mayfield.
Well, yes.
I thought you were talking about good players who are going to win Super Bowls.
I was going more of guys who continue to play when they have more money than God.
Absolutely. And Ben Roethlisberger.
Right. They don't stop. But that's the NFL. The NFL is big business. There is, you know, there will be tons of players released this week who will be fighting to get back in. That's different than a parent sitting there watching this. Yeah. And then maybe going to somebody like Dr. Maloney and saying, what do you think? I'm sure he gets that from people in a sense. I'm saying it while he's right here, but I'm saying this because that is way, way more on the ground impactful in terms of high school athletes or younger ages, because it's pretty easy to say to a kid, hey, let's go do something else.
Yeah.
You're not giving up a multi-million dollar contract.
No, that's totally fair. Now, do you, Daniel Kelly, regret playing for 14 years as you did?
I regret the time I played. I mean, I've broken every finger, almost broke my collarbone, my neck, broken both ankles.
When you say you broke your neck,
yeah.
What kind of an injury was that?
I cracked a vertebrae on an onside kick diving in for recovery and hit head-to-head with the opposing team trying to go for the recovery, and cracked a vertebrae that they thought was – I had a concussion. They thought it was just a sprain. Came to find out – 4 years later, when I lost feeling in my right side of my body, Yeah, I would explain it as happened more and more often, but I explained it how it felt like getting hit on the funny bone. But imagine on top of your neck, so your whole right side of your body is tingling like if you hit your elbow.
Wow.
And so went to a few doctors. We tried cortisone shots. We tried that. And then finally I had to go have surgery and have a neck operation to stop the pinching of the nerves up there. So, but that was, I had that surgery when I was 27, 28, and I stopped playing when I was 22. So it was years later, but you live with that. It's kind of one of those things where I live with saying, hey, I got pain, it's going to be. I remember an entire season, I would have a cortisone shot on Saturday to play a game that day and then be on crutches for 4 days, icing my ankle just so I could play again the next Saturday. So, I mean, obviously I'm not playing in the level of the NFL, but when Andrew Luck says that he's tired of the rehab and the pain, it's not what we touched a little bit of earlier, like you said, Mike, about the surgery, and then the doctor says it's successful, and then we think, oh, he'll be back, and you get that report from Adam Schefter, he'll be back in 6 to 8 weeks. And you don't think what that 6 to 8 weeks looks like for that player. It's just a different world. So do I regret playing? Absolutely not. Do I regret the time I played? Yeah. I would have never gone to college if I didn't have a scholarship.
Can your kids play?
They can play when they're older. My wife signed them up for flag football. I yanked them out. My oldest day later, I went to a practice, and they were trying to run a West Coast offense for second graders.
Wow.
And I said, well, if we're not going to deal with the basics, this is not where you need to be.
That's got to wait till at least third grade.
Third, fourth grade. You got to get the ball down. It's a downfield league.
It's a downfield league, yeah.
Second and third grade. Bob in Rochester on the phone first. Go ahead, Bob.
Hi. Thanks. And I wanted to first agree with Dr. Maloney's first point about this really being a turning point because of the high-profile nature of it, but also because of the demographics that were mentioned in your report about the number of young players peaked in like a...
About a decade ago, yeah.
But yeah, and it's going to continue to drop. And then there was the high school that quit its team because they didn't have enough players. The NFL has a concussion protocol, which they're trying to promote for safety. But as Dr. Maloney mentioned as well, it's really the continuously repetitive subconcussive hits that happen thousands of times in even a college player's career might never have an actual diagnosed concussion, but that these have been shown through studies one of which was just published from the U of R players, which, again, I'm sure Dr. Maloney can talk about accelerometers put into helmets of players to show that brain impacts were happening on many players without any concussion whatsoever. So in the long run, I think that families are going to have kids play tennis, soccer, basketball, many other things. But in spite of the billions that the NFL has, I think we'll see that in the future as being what I call a dead sport walking. Mm. I don't think it's going to survive in the long run.
All right, Bob, thank you. Dr. Maloney, you want to hit that?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's been a lot of, you know, commentary about is football a dying sport. There's that United States of Football documentary a few years ago, and I think people have heard the kind of comments that Malcolm Gladwell has made about football. And you know, it does, as Daniel alluded to, provide people with an opportunity to go to college or have experiences that they may not otherwise not have been able to achieve. I think a lot of parents are going to say that's not worth it for me to have my child participate in sports. And you mentioned earlier the percentage of participation is declining. But you look at the NFL.
It's not falling off a cliff, though. It's not. I mean,
no, it's not falling off a cliff. And if you look at the NFL, I mean, it's still so wildly popular, and we love to watch it and cheer for our team. So I don't think it's going to die. But I think it does highlight that we need to understand a lot more what's happening. The technology needs to evolve, the helmet technology, the sensor technology, and we need to understand, are there things that we can be doing to identify those at risk, something that we can intervene and potentially protect them? Because Bob was right on, it's not necessarily the concussion that gets identified one or two or three times, it's the concussions that don't get identified that kind of build up, and there's more and more hits. And those are the things that probably are going to be irreversible. So we need to be able to identify all of the at-risk individuals and be able to try to provide some type of a solution that's going to protect them as best that we can.
So let me just be fair here. You know, Bob mentioned what I referenced off the top of the program, which is the Associated Press reporting that Rensselaer High School basically said we can't get enough kids to play football this year. That's one school. Right. I don't know of any others in our area that have had that happen.
No, but we do have some schools that are reducing because the numbers are going to 8-man football, or they're attempting to do that this year, but it's still playing. Here's the one thing I will say is I believe the trend in certain areas of the country is going to continue to decrease. But the NFL, if you look at the rosters of NFL players, the vast majority of players come from Florida, Alabama,
SEC, baby.
Texas, those areas. It is still a long, long way before football is not king in those places. And to many people, it's, and I hate to, it's not cliched, but to say we talk about opportunity to play, it's still going to maintain there. And I think it's going to be a long time before many of those places reduce. There's, you know, high school stadiums in Texas that have 25,000 people show up on a Friday night. So that world is different. I do think it's going to be impactful in other places. A place like Rochester, New York, I think is going to be impacted. I think those numbers are going to continue to go down, maybe with people with some different opportunities. But the NFL, and look, I am not here to stick up for the owners. The owners are greedy beyond belief. That's the way they operate. But if you look at the NFL now compared to the game 10, 12 years ago, the amount of hitting, training camp, practices has all been reduced. They're protecting what they have. They're going to protect the quarterbacks, and they're going to protect the sport in general. The concussion protocol is certainly not what it probably should be or will be in a few years, but it is certainly more impactful than it was a few years ago, where it was guys dinged up and he comes back in the game like it was nothing.
Yeah, they go, you got your bell rung, huh?
And then he's
shake
back
it off.
Right in it. So, you know, look at a guy like Mitch Morris of the Bills. He's been out for several weeks before he's cleared. Again, they still have a long way to go, but the NFL, for money reasons, is going to protect their players because they want to protect the sport.
All right, Julie in Brighton next on the phone. Go ahead, Julie.
Yes, hi. I would like to alert you all and the audience about a sport called Ultimate Frisbee. I don't know if you're aware of it, but it's pretty popular, and it's becoming popular in Central and South America. I know a young Venezuelan young man who is on a team here in Rochester, and I went to a tournament that they had. It went on at Ellison Park on Saturday, And it was it's a great sport. People aren't banging heads together. They're, you know, not tackling anything like that. But it involves a lot of stamina, a lot of teamwork, and it's fun to watch. And so there, it's going on here in Rochester. Sometimes they play at Seneca Park. It's male and female. So I think it's like six players on a team. And if there are four guys, there are two women, and it's the same for the opposite team. They have a lot of fun. It's a really great sport. They kind of follow some rules of like football and basketball, like they can't hold the frisbee for over 10 seconds or something like that. And then they have to go, you know, like it's kind of like a football field. They toss it to the end, and they have to be holding it at the...
Well, Julia, let me just jump in, because I was going to ask the sports guy. Mm-hmm. Mike Catalano is the sports director of 13WHAM. What I've learned in the last 5 years about Frisbee sports, Frisbee golf and ultimate Frisbee, the players who are really good are really, really good.
Yeah.
They're very serious about it. I don't know if any schools are doing that
It's
more rec stuff, et cetera. Yeah.
We've done a few stories on not the ultimate Frisbee. We've done a few stories on disc golf.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
I'm sorry, so it's disc golf.
Disc golf, yes.
Not Frisbee golf.
Yeah, there's some pretty big tournaments. Guys play up into like February here that are still playing.
And they're very good.
Oh, they're very good. It's cool. I don't know, you know, I don't know if at any point it's going to become a spectator type sport.
That's
but we're talking about participation more
sure,
than we are that.
Absolutely. Tim in Pittsford. Go ahead, Tim.
Hey, Evan. As fans, we are absolutely ridiculous. Because if you look at Andrew Luck's injuries through just six seasons, I mean, a normal person like me, if I had all these injuries, that would be an awful life for me. And a lacerated kidney, I'm probably going out of work on long-term disability and maybe not coming back. But after something like that, as a fan, and I think fantasy has a lot to do with it, but if you see more than 4 to 6 weeks, you're complaining, not realizing that as soon as he comes back, seven guys, probably over 260 pounds, are rushing him every play, trying to murder him after an injury like this, where it says a lacerated kidney that left him peeing blood, partially torn abdomen, torn cartilage. I mean, we get upset when a receiver breaks his finger and isn't back in 2 weeks with some sort of cast on that's going to get nailed by 25 different helmets during the game. Where if just an average person is probably going to have a cast on for 5 or 6 weeks and be out of work and slowly come back. I think betting in fantasy football has a lot to do with that. There's not a lot of compassion, and people can't relate to it no matter what. It's too bad, though.
Opie to the masses. Thank you, Tim. I appreciate that. Yeah, I mean, the whole lacerated kidney, is that what I heard? Is that what it was? Because I think Rob, the engineer, actually physically winced through the glass. That makes me sick even thinking about it, to think about what these guys go through. Thank you, Tim. After our only break of the hour, we're going to come back and talk about what we do and don't know about CTE. And our guests are going to talk about, you know, their views about how the public is sort of digesting this information. And if you want to share more of your feedback as we talk about Andrew Luck's retirement and the future of football in America, it's coming up in just a moment after our only break with Mike Catalano from 13WHAM News. Daniel Kelly is a former college football player who played for 14 years. Dr. Mike Maloney is on the line with us, professor of orthopedics, chief of the sports medicine division, and director of the Center for Humane Athleticism and Musculoskeletal Performance and Prevention at UR Medicine. Coming up in our second hour, we have an assignment for you. Right now, if you can, look up Joy Wave's new music video. You can find it on YouTube. It's called Like a Kennedy. We're talking about the artist's intent and whether the public interprets the meaning the way the artist intended. It depicts the Kennedy assassination in Joy Wave's own way, but it's about much more than that. We'll talk about it next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. A lot of comments about CTE, brain injury, etc. Dr. Maloney, again, I know this that you've got a lot of colleagues who do research in these areas. There's a lot that we obviously still want to know and still want to learn. I want to try to relate to you my best understanding, and you, Doctor, can maybe kind of give me a little grade on how we're doing with understanding this, because Daniel Engber wrote a piece for Slate Magazine online, and he basically said he thinks that there's been some misreporting about CTE. Not to say that CTE is not a problem,
But he points out that the studies that we see, even the most recent one in which, what, like 110 out of 111 subjects were found to have CTE, brains of former NFL players. What Engber is pointing out is that every study that we've really had on CTE is kind of self-selected. It's family saying, hey, we're going to volunteer this, you know, this family member of ours who played, we think probably had CTE or showed symptoms or this and that. The kind of things that would put somebody in the category of probably did. And the interesting thing is the research is showing that when you think someone probably did, especially when they played in the NFL, it's something like 95 to 99% they did have CTE. And that is obviously a problem. However, let me go ahead and read from what Engber writes here. Despite ample and alarmist reporting on this topic, a crisis of a certain magnitude does not appear to be in progress yet. According to a survey of roughly 1,000 former NFL players conducted at the University of Michigan in 2008, NFL retirees are not as a group overwhelmed by sadness, violent outbursts, or suicidal thoughts. The Michigan researchers found that about 17% of the younger retirees had been diagnosed as having depression, and that their reports of depressive symptoms are just slightly higher than those of men in the general population. This depression gap narrows as the former players age. Meanwhile, the retirees are much less likely to report having episodes of explosive anger than other men, and we know from a different study that their risk of suicide is less than half of what one would expect to see in age-matched control groups. The Michigan researchers did find major cause for worry. Former players showed inflated rates of dementia, Alzheimer's, and other memory-related disease. The prevalence of these conditions among the younger men is 12 times higher than it is in the general population. Among the older retirees from the NFL, the rate is 3 times higher. So it's a problem, but we need a lot bigger study and not just sort of selected samples. It seems to be what Engber's analysis is. And we need a lot more time to fully grasp just how big a problem it is, though we know it is a problem. Is all of that fair, Dr. Maloney, or do you see it differently?
The only way you can diagnose CTE right now is if you take a biopsy of somebody's brain. And so that's not something we're able to do until they've donated their brain after they've passed. I think a lot of research now is going into biomarkers and blood testing or urine testing. Can you detect certain proteins in the blood or in the urine that might be markers of something that happened to the brain, that there was some trauma and some breakdown? Like if somebody has a heart attack, you can check for certain enzymes, and if the enzymes are elevated, that will confirm to you that the heart had an event. Can we do something similar with the brain where, you know, if you're concerned, or maybe you do random screening of athletes and say, hey, if these proteins are at a certain level, you are above the threshold that's acceptable for risk, and we're going to make you take a week off or whatever the strategy might be. But I think that's where really things need to focus is how can we adequately evaluate and know what the impact is of trauma to the head? And, you know, one of the things I think that sometimes is challenging when you think about young athletes, if they tear their ACL, well, you know, it's typically surgery, and then it's, you know, 6 months or 9 months. It's a structured rehab program. You know what the outcome is pretty much going to be. You have a concussion, it's not as predictable, right? You don't know if it's going to take 2 months or 2 years or resolve ever. We don't have great ways to know if there's been successful healing of the brain. So it's not a predictable timeline. There's a physical side of it and a cognitive side of it that they have to recover from. And to be honest, recovering from a concussion is somewhat counter to what athletes are used to. They're used to exercising rigorously and working out and having these goals. They have a concussion and you're telling them we need mental rest and physical rest and we don't know how long it's going to take. So we need to understand better what happens when you get a concussion or even these subconcussive events, and are there things that are markers that we can utilize to intervene and hopefully, you know, prevent these long-term consequences that lead to CTE?
Mike Catalano, some would say, Evan, your parsing stuff, obviously hits to the head we know are problems. We're going to get better research as time goes on, but we know enough now to say these players are at substantially higher risk for all kinds of problems, not just dementia, and that there's something maybe macabre about that. How do you see that?
Well, that's true. But are we going to just talk about the reality of it is, are we talking about not allowing players to play, right? To Dr. Maloney's point, more information is what's going to allow teams to manage this and for players to manage this, I guess, would be the best way. I guess my only point is, and again, I sound like I'm sticking up for the league, but I just look and say Mitch Morris, again, from the Bills, is still out in concussion protocol. They have made progress, at least in addressing those issues. They have probably have a ton more to go, but I don't believe the league is blind to it. And I do believe their motivation is financial. It always is. You got to just follow the money for the NFL. But in some ways, they're trying to protect themselves from future lawsuits and everything else that's going to go on in the league. So I do think that's the case. I think to just blanketly say this is going to happen to all the players is unfair to those players, because to your point, it's also taking a blind eye to other sports where there are issues too. So I think it's better, but it is a contact violent sport, especially at the NFL level. And I think you're never going to take this part of out of the game.
And then one other point on that I'm sure Daniel went away on, because all the things that Mike talks about with what we're seeing with concussion protocol, what the league has done, you know, you're going to see every week somebody's going to complain that, well, you can't breathe on the quarterback without getting flagged. That's only true if it's Tom Brady, guys. That is only true if it's Brady. Everybody else you can actually still hit. But I understand what the league is trying to do. But here's what I'm wondering, Mike. Everything the league has done to protect quarterbacks, to make it harder to get away with a late hit, a gratuitous hit on the quarterback, improvement of helmets, everything. And you still got Andrew Luck saying, not enough, can't do it.
Well, and look, it can happen to any player. I think, to go back to the original point, you know, the rules are now set up to, again, this is specific to the quarterbacks, but to really protect the quarterbacks. The Colts did nothing to protect their investment in Andrew Luck. That poor guy was out there playing with limited help around him and took a beating when he played. He also probably took some chances as a player that is difficult for these guys. We got a young guy here in Buffalo and Josh Allen who takes some chances running around on the field. It's counterintuitive to the way, you know, Dr. Maloney talking about the way athletes respond to their injuries. It's also the way that they're bred to play the game. But they do need to back off a little bit. Andrew Luck wasn't that guy. He played hard. He played he's tough from a football sense, but it probably isn't the smartest way to play, to protect yourself a little bit. And the team didn't do a good job to protect him. My point is the league is trying to make rules. You're right. Let every guy sit in his lounge chair and say, oh, you can't breathe on the quarterback. They need to find a way to – again, it's a financial thing. They're going to protect
the
quarterbacks because that's the guys people want to see.
Absolutely. Do you want Jacoby Brissett or do you want Andrew Luck? Do you want Josh Allen or who's backing up Josh Allen?
Matt Barkley.
Yeah, do you want Matt Barkley?
Well, some fans probably do. Oh,
and that's why they're fans
right?
And not in the league. Now, Matt, for you as a Colts fan, I mean, and also someone who played and deals with the lingering effects of those injuries, what do you make of the league's continual efforts to make it safer, to make a violent sport safer?
Yeah, I think that so going from one level to another, I've noticed a lot of differences, and I imagine that next step's even more. In college, we were full pads once a year. It was in day camp, and you had a hitting drill. I see videos on Facebook and Twitter and social media of these guys playing Oklahoma, which if you're not familiar with that hitting drill, it's a ridiculous drill. It's not used in real life. There's no, in a real game atmosphere, it does not simulate anything. And it's more for the coaches, the team to get wows and, ooh, look at that hit. I don't know if the NFL, by the time they get to NFL, to the doctor's point, I don't know how much damage has been done to these players at that point to get there. We spoke about Andrew Luck retiring, and as we spoke earlier, that if him retiring at 29 is something that is a luxury that he has because of him specifically, he also is one of the highest paid positions on the field. If you're a corner, a linebacker, or, you know, an offensive guard, you might not be able to retire in 7 years.
Oh, a long snapper. I went to high school with a guy who became the long snapper for the New Orleans Saints and stayed in as long as he could.
Yeah. Matt Overton, who was a long snapper for the Colts, and now I believe down the Ravens. He offered to buy all the season ticket holders for the Colts who wanted to get rid of him after this week. But, yeah, I mean, if you're a position that doesn't get paid $29, $30 million, 24 is what he's getting paid this year. Luck isn't paid this year. But Dak Prescott turned down $30 million. I mean, what would Andrew Luck have made the next contract year?
That's why I think Mike's point about if we see those position players who haven't yet gotten a big contract doing the same, then you'll know that we could see some massive change coming in the league. Probably fair.
I mean, the NFL, to your point, though, the NFL does, we shouldn't, and I hate to defend the NFL as well, but they have the best resources to treat these players. For example, Andrew Luck, 2 years ago, and if they don't, by the way, if they don't, they want to protect their high-paid player. 2 years ago, when Andrew Luck set out the year for a shoulder injury, he didn't rehab in Indianapolis. He rehabbed in Germany. Now, some could argue there's HGH there that's not being tracked by the NFL, but he had to go wherever he wanted to rehab. So we hope that that's the same treated for every player. I don't know if it is.
But he kind of grew up overseas. He's got a family that's moved a lot. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you're putting a little bit of a tinfoil hat on for me now.
No. I'm just saying that the NFL did not stop him. They could have said, you have to go to this doctor.
There has to be a protocol.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I go back to this. Anything I'm saying positively about the league in general is based on money. It is absolutely based on money. Protect their biggest investment. The player that's protected the most on the field is the guy who's worth the most to them, and that's the quarterback. It's not really helping the linemen. Yes, it is in terms of practice and all those things. It's different than it used to be, but they're going to protect their investment.
They'll do the right thing if it's the profitable thing.
100%.
Dr. Maloney, I want to read a comment from Mary Beth, who writes, "The way we view injuries in general needs to be addressed at a very young age. My son played football. I never supported it, but my husband played and is a huge fan. And my son fractured his arm. Within a couple of weeks, his cast was wrapped in foam, and he was allowed to play again. This was okayed by the orthopedic doc. His dad took him to his appointment and was all on board. The foam was designed to protect other players from the hard cast. My kid was supposedly just fine. It all seemed crazy to me, and this was at the high school level." Dr. Maloney, does that sound normal and acceptable to you?
I think, all injuries have a spectrum, and there are certainly injuries that would be considered stable injuries that would be safe to play with. Section 5 has rules that if you have any type of a brace or a cast, any material that could impact another player, it needs to be fully padded, and the officials have to check and make sure it meets their specifications. So, yes, can athletes play with injuries that include even a fractured bone? Yes, they can. Hopefully the orthopedic surgeon who's taking care of that athlete and making that recommendation, is doing the right thing in the interest of the athlete. But to her point, there is a tremendous amount of pressure these young athletes feel when they're injured. Pressure from their teammates, pressure from coaches, pressure from parents. And it's sometimes hard to kind of, think through all that. And I think as a parent, you always need to be the advocate for your child. And hopefully you have a care provider that you trust their opinion on. But to her point, yes, they can certainly play with certain injuries. And we feel that is a safe thing to do.
Mike Catalano, as we get ready to wrap this hour, is there a risk to overstating the stories of Andrew Luck that they stand out because they are so rare, and until then we would overstate the importance sort of societally? Obviously to the league it's a big story, but societally, can we overstate it?
I think yes. I think we can, and you know what's going to happen now. A week from now, the season starts, and the only people really worried about Andrew Luck are Colts fans, right? That's the way this league is, whether it's injuries.
Texans
whether it's
fans are happy. Well, they really respect this decision.
Yeah, that's right. They're all on board with it. It's, fan is short for fanatic. I mean, it is, and that's what people are. They're going to think that way. But the long-term effects, like I said, all these things combined. Look at the amount of information that's out there about the sport that wasn't out there 10 years ago. So parents do read this. There are options for kids. There are other options in football, too. Someone mentioned, whether it's 7-on-7 football flag football type games where you may get the same type of feel. Won't be quite the same thing as football. All those things can happen. I just stop short of the demise of the NFL talk only because of the money and the popularity around the league. It's going to be impactful to a segment of people, but there'll be plenty of – and again, 90 players on every roster right now, cut in half. It's the only job where all those guys come in for a six-week interview before half of them are shipped out of town, and they're all trying to get back into the league. It's a ways away from that.
Dr. Maloney, 30 seconds. We've talked a lot about what parents might say. Do kids raise these questions more than they used to?
I think they're definitely more in tune to it. I mean, the internet has certainly provided a resource where anyone can kind of look things up and read the history or stories of athletes who've been injured and what it's taken for them to get back. And they often will ask questions, you know, hey, so-and-so had this same injury and they got back in 3 months. What did he do differently besides being a professional athlete and having all the resources in the world to achieve that? So I think for sure that they are definitely more in tune, and education and communication is always key. I think from my standpoint, the important thing as a healthcare provider is that we are aware of the mental and psychological impact that injury has on these young athletes and that we're ready to be open to evaluating and treating them.
Dr. Maloney, thanks for the time as always. Great having you.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
And Daniel Kelly will tell you, we can listen to kids all we want, but kids will probably tell us what you probably thought one day when you were playing. You're invincible, right?
Absolutely.
Take a stinger and get back out there.
Absolutely.
Kids
yeah.
always think they're invincible. And how you feel now is a little bit different, but I wish you well, and thanks for taking the time to share your story today.
Thank you for having me.
And Mike Catalano, we'll see you on 13 WAM News, 13 WAM Sports. Thanks for being here as well.
Thanks for having me.
All right, short break, more connections coming up.